Okay, call to order the February EDA meeting. It is February 2nd. Time is 6:32. Let's start with a roll call. We can go right around the table. Matt Dingy here from EDA.
Bob Bessel from the EDA.
Barry Dickstein, EDA.
Tom Wagner, EDA.
Dave DeFusco, EDA.
Tommy Boston, EDA.
And Jen Dietrich, EDA. Sorry.
That's right, I wasn't sure he paused. So.
And Neil Page is also here, town planner. No one from the public is here, so we can skip over public comment. So let's jump into discussion item number one. So I reshuffled the deck a little bit in terms of the order. Obviously, number one is new. Given the fact that we're in a new calendar year, I thought it would make sense to put our heads together and come up with priorities for 2026, especially given the fact that we ended 2025 kind of singularly focused, and rightfully so. We were pushing really hard for the facade improvement program, which I'll get to in a minute. But now I think as we push through 2026, I think it makes sense to kind of broaden out our focus to tackle other agenda items in more detail. So I don't think we have to get into detail now. Let's revisit the priorities at the end after we've had a chance to go through the agenda items. Because obviously the agenda items are, you know, should be priorities for us, but if there's anything that's not listed that someone thinks we should pursue this year, let's have that conversation once we chew through all the agenda items. But I just wanted to kind of tee that up at the beginning of the meeting so everyone has a chance to kind of ponder it as we discuss the agenda items. So moving on to the facade improvement program, just an update there. I put in a request to get on the Board of Selectmen's meeting. I think it was for January 14th. Unfortunately, they didn't add us. My assumption, and I think Bob agrees, is that we were competing, or our goal was to try to get a Steve grant to help fund the program. I think there's probably another project in town that I think is probably more of a priority right now in terms of getting that or applying for SD funding. So a little disheartening, the fact that we put a lot of work in at the end of the year to try to get in front of the Board of Selectmen, and the fact that they didn't, you know, add us to this just to even hear the idea. It's a little disappointing, but I don't think it's dead. I think we continue to pursue it. Maybe in 2026 we pursue a different avenue of funding. At least until next year, maybe a Steve grant would be in play next year. But and with all fairness, we did kind of push this in at the very end. So I kind of get the fact that, you know, if there are other priorities, so be it. But with that said, if anyone has any ideas in terms of other sources of financing that we could pursue, at least for this year, I'd be all for, you know, pushing for that.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
Yeah.
Did you get any direct correspondence about not being added, or there was any follow-up information indicating, you know, why? We're just
kind of there was nothing. I actually looked at the agenda for the Board of Selectmen and weren't there.
Okay.
And then I followed up with I forget who it was, and
Mark?
They said, yeah, was it
Mark?
No, it wasn't Mark. It may have been Melissa. I don't recall.
They haven't released the 2026 application yet for STEEP, which is kind of surprising because it came out January 9th last year.
Yeah.
And it's always like first week or second week in January.
Right.
So I'm just kind of trying to be hopeful. I'm wondering if maybe, and I haven't heard anything at all, but I'm wondering if maybe, you know, it gets released, let's say, second week of February. Maybe Selectmen are looking to do a call for, you know, people to bring in ideas or something. They've done that before in the past. Or
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe because we were leading, trying to be the first one to get their attention about Steve. Maybe
right.
We, got them thinking, and then they're going to wait until it comes out. I don't know. But at least I think when the application comes out, maybe it's worth, you know, revisiting the request again. Just say, hey, now the application's out, would you be willing to put us on the agenda, something like that?
Have you had any dialogue with anybody
no,
about this?
No, but I think it would be fair to, when it comes out, to just maybe ask again, just even if it's not like an official submission, just a phone call, or I could pop into.
Well, we should look at it because the criteria changes.
That's
remember
true.
That one year where it was instead of, you know, stuff that would benefit, you know, the town as a whole, it was only town owned. Only go for projects on town-owned property, which is a good street.
Yeah.
The other thing is we have you know, so we should look at it just to see if that's the case.
Right.
When we met, we did meet with Kevin and Mark Penny in December. And Kevin was very, very clear that the he had a very different priority.
Okay.
It was mostly about the Mills Pond area.
That makes sense.
You know, those projects, we indicated that, you know, they may, you know, steep may, you know, may not have a, you know, that may not be have the warm and fuzzies for steep. So, you know, we'll have to see. But the other thing is we had a conversation with Chris Edge, or I did, who was the EDA person down in Berlin.
Yeah.
He's had several goes with a facade improvement program, had great success with it. One was funded with a steep grant, and the other one, I can't remember exactly what the funding source was, but it was not steep. So we can go down, and he's given us an invitation to go to Berlin, meet with him, or he's an ABOM resident, so we could catch up with him here if we want to. And I'd recommend that we pursue that. I just have a feeling that this is such a well-constructed program that we should keep pushing.
Yeah, I'm all for setting something up.
Yeah.
I mean, we could go to Berlin. That's fine. Better maybe if we just do a local.
I think local.
I don't know if we need to see kind of the...
No, I mean, it's they've done a great job.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
And what about the guy from Connecticut Main Street?
Is he
a potential source of ideas for
Yeah, he can talk to us about what other funding sources are available. Yeah, Carl Rosa.
Yeah. Neil, is there any other grants that come to mind that might be suitable?
No, I was actually just running it through ChatGPT 5.2 just to see what it said as far as what state programs have funded municipal facade improvement programs in Connecticut to see what it says.
Yeah.
It's still cranking. So I just typed that in now.
So for you guys' benefit, you know, obviously a facade improvement program, it would be grant money. So it would, like, in the past, other towns have used loans. This would be a grant, so we would partner with them. We would contribute 50% up to $50,000, I believe is how we marked it. You know, to really try to invigorate or revitalize the Route 44 corridor in terms of, you know, properties that you might benefit from some money to, you know, improve the facade of their building.
That's great.
And Matt, that money that Kent puts up is just a small fraction, right?
In terms of like what the, like the match.
With the overall improvement, yeah.
That would TBD in terms of.
I guess you don't know until you.
That would, yeah. That would have to be the town's or the Board of Selectmen's decision in terms of if they want to try to match or put in some sort of a match. Usually steep. I think it was last year I looked, and every single grant that each town had matched up to a certain amount.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think it's recommended.
Yeah,
they do. The towns do it
up to.
If you don't have skin in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Let's move on to the abstract. Anything new there?
A couple things. We've been working now. I told you 2 months ago, because I missed the January meeting, that we had initiated the DEC Brownfields grant with GZA. So they've been out in these most unideal conditions to do soil sampling and borings, and that's caused complications with the contract and subs and you know, the drilling and stuff. So I have a meeting Thursday to kind of coordinate between. It's weird because like the property owner is the beneficiary of the work, and then we have a consultant that's hired to do the work, and then the town's actually the one that's controlling the funding, paying the consultant, handed down through DECD. So it gets kind of complicated, but basically we're trying to get everybody on the same page because some of the locations that they were supposed to do couldn't be accessed, or you know, the there's a timing delay issue because of the weather and things like that. So right now that's on hold till we re-coordinate and figure out what to do with the weather. And then part of that scope of work was the economic analysis, which They, GZA hired Camoin Associates, which is the firm that actually wrote our TIF master plan. And they had just started that work 2 weeks ago. So they are now working on the economic impact analysis, which is a critical component of developing a tax increment financing agreement with the owners of the X Factory in order to do, you know, TIF funding for the project. So that's underway. They had a meeting with the owner today as well on that, and that's kind of good. And I guess they're looking to, you know, evolve the scope on that and see where else they can go with that type of work, because there's a lot of different things that can fall under the economic impact analysis, and they want to get a good understanding of marketability of the project that got approved under planning and zoning as well. So that's all good stuff. And then also they spent, you know, time and money, and they disconnected the fire suppression system from the cistern and connected to the actual pressurized water system, which is a huge like benefit, because we've all been waiting for that pump to fail. I mean, every, I don't know how often they have to repump up the water up the hill to the cistern. Yeah, and then it just leaks out, and then that's the only thing that's fueling the sprinklers if there's a fire.
Oh. And so, also flushing the toilets.
Yeah, so we're very thankful that they saw the value doing that, but that's, I mean, it's a major thing. It's a major expense. Not sure how they did that, but walking by, you wouldn't notice that as an improvement. Nobody would say anything's going on walking by, because you don't see those things. But that is a big step forward. So another step towards, you know, stabilizing the property, which is a good thing. But yeah, that's all. There's not any real development activity or anything like that going on.
Everybody good on the Axe Factory? Okay. Rail Trail. Any signs of life?
Yeah, I actually coordinated with the shop's ownership, and hang on a second. I got an update from them on where things are.
So this is a plan to extend the Farmington River bike trail from, say, Best Gleaners into the shops of Farmington Valley.
Very cool.
And then also to extend it more formally on up Lawton Road to potential of that bike pump track off of Lawton.
Right. Yeah. So also down and continuing down Route 44 to the town line.
Yeah. We have the money to construct from like Best Gleaners into the shops. And we have the money to design, plan and design from Best Gleaners to the Simsbury town line. So those are all great things, but we've had both of those for a while, and we haven't been able to do either. So anyway, one of the main hangups was basically you're bringing the trail across private property, and it's not the most simple private property you could bring a trail across. So they, as of this morning, they said they are still waiting for final sign off from several tenants. They've fielded a variety of questions and had a few conversations. All inquiries have been fairly straightforward, and none so far have suggested any need to revisit our approach and or the easement form. It took a long time for the town and the shop's ownership to agree on language that would work for both parties for the easement. Following approval of tenants, I anticipate needing to approach our lender as well, but I'm confirming that. I hope to have a response from the remaining tenants within the next 1 to 3 weeks. Lender approval is necessary. Expect that to take 2 to 4 weeks following tenant sign-off. Appreciates our patience and keep them abreast of any discussions that might affect the easement language. So no, we're trying to hold the easement language where we agreed on it, and we have a conceptual layout already designed at least halfway through the property. So that's where that is. That's positive, but still not enough progress. We really would love to have that finalized now, not, you know, 1 to 4 weeks from now, but we just have to wait and keep politely nudging. And then the other portion of trail on Lawton Road, we are waiting on, we have the design underway for the piece that goes in front of the church on Lawton Road, 27 Lawton Road, I think. And that is temporarily on hold while we're waiting for additional information on the utility poles. It turns out we're probably going to have to relocate those utility poles, and they really are incredibly expensive, so we're trying to figure out how that might be handled a different way. And Department of Public Works, I think, was coordinating with the first selectman on that. And then the other one we're kind of waiting on, the New England Mountain Bike Association. They were issued a RFP for design consultants, a design build for the bike pump pump track and skills facility on Lawton Road, and we're waiting to see what happens with that, but we don't have any grants underway for the trail that would go along that piece of land as well, 55 Lawton Road, that's where that is. So that's everything on the rail trail.
Okay. And, you know, obviously, I don't think the EDA could play a role at this point, but if that changes in your mind, just let us know.
Yeah, if there's a point at which I need some advocacy or people to kind of sit down in a meeting and, you know, talk or be present while we talk things out, I would absolutely pull you in, but okay. I don't feel like we're at that point.
Okay.
Do we, just a question, do we need a, have we been in any conversation with the properties east of Secret Lake Road? We've got the Midas, and then there's the properties between Midas and was it Old Albany Turnpike?
Yeah, we did have some initial conversations with them, and then actually Steve Mitchell, who's you know, head of, well, he's head of so many things. Is he head of Bike Walk Connecticut now?
Yeah.
Or he's
yeah.
Yeah, and
he's the press.
He went out and talked with some of the property owners on our behalf as well, which is really nice. But the current concept exits the shops and then stays on the state right-of-way, and then gets onto the old town-owned right-of-way for Old Albany Turnpike, and then comes back out to the state right-of-way. And it's actually very wide on the south side as you continue to Simsbury. And so we're trying to keep it there and not have to get involved with any additional private property owners, with the possible exception. The Midas is so tight that eventually there might need to be some sort of DOT required easement there, but we're not there yet. Unfortunately, that's phase two of the design, and I put that on hold because we couldn't see spending more money on design until we actually knew exactly where we're bringing it in on the shop side.
Yeah. Okay.
Do the shops still own behind Midas there where they used to have a couple of golf holes?
Yeah.
Okay.
The second hole.
Second hole.
Yep.
You can kind of, if you look, you can actually still see,
yes,
like the whole layout.
Yeah.
The earth hasn't reclaimed it quite yet.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on to community outreach. I condensed these into one agenda item. So just to remind everyone, kind of the goal here is to, you know, not operate in a vacuum as far as the EDA is concerned, but to have ongoing communications with residents, businesses, and developers so that we can gauge challenges that you know, particularly businesses are facing. We can keep in touch with developers so that you know, we can potentially find out, you know, if there's a match with any potential opportunities within town in terms of development. And then obviously we've had our resident or community survey a year or two ago, where we're kind of gauging the sentiment of residents in terms of, you know, what their thoughts are in economic development, and then taking all that together can kind of help to, you know, formulate the policies that we pursue or not pursue. So focusing on 5B, the businesses, that was supposed to be an initiative in 2025 that we did push a little bit forward, but I think that needs someone to kind of champion that and really move it forward. I'd like to see that be you know, a top priority for us this year. And then I know we had talked about, you know, how best to reach out to businesses. At least in my mind, like a hybrid approach probably makes the most sense. So that would be like kind of meeting with businesses, but then you know, that is time consuming, and you can't reach everyone. So maybe some sort of survey as well might make a lot of sense. But certainly open to some suggestions there. And then I think a business recognition program makes a lot of sense. To my knowledge, the town, you know, certainly doesn't have one now. I don't know if it ever did. But just to kind of recognize businesses that have kind of been in town for a number of years with some sort of certificate or something they could hang on the wall. I don't know if they'd be interested in that, but I think it kind of gives some credence to the job that they're doing and the fact that they're well regarded in town. And then just have it, you know, again, a database of businesses that we can, you know, a contact list that we can, you know, have and maintain so we can be in touch with them, you know, on an as-needed basis. So ultimately, kind of, what role can we play in the challenges they face? Are they planning on expanding? you know, what can we do as a town to help grow businesses and promote them is the idea there. And to get in front of them is the best way to kind of pull out that information.
I'm happy to volunteer to okay. take that on.
That'd be great.
Get it started and just kind of come up with an initial list that we can maybe vet
yeah.
at the next meeting and talk about approach. I can come up with a high level bullets on
yeah.
approach.
And that'd be great.
Cool.
Perfect.
Awesome.
Thanks.
Of course.
Just a reminder, too, we do have still pending our CIP request, which was $24,000 for business and traction wayfinding. So our new members are aware that we submitted that. I don't have an update on that. I know the CIP committee met a couple weeks ago, which I had a meeting across the hall, so I was able to go in, and I haven't seen any minutes yet. But the I believe my budget hearing night with the Board of Selectmen is February 11th, Wednesday at 6, and I believe CIP is the same night with them. So hopefully that is still being carried forward. And, you know, hopefully it hasn't been cut yet.
Right.
So we don't seem to do so well with our requests, but at least that's, you know, out there, and the new members should know we, you know, made that effort.
Yeah. Never ventured, never won.
Yep.
So if, you know, if we were to get that that money, then obviously that would have to be another priority for this year in terms
yes.
of, you know, what firm do we contract with to come up? Because this would be for design,
yeah.
design money is what it would be.
Yep.
Come up with a design plan for wayfinding.
We'd probably have to solicit it through an RFP.
Yep.
There's one firm in particular, I remember we did this a couple years ago when we did the Council Streetscape, and one of the firms didn't get the streetscape of their package with one of the consultants. They actually did the decorative wayfinding sign in what's the park in the north end of Hartford? Keeney Park. Yeah,
yeah.
It's just, they really did a great job up there. If you've ever been through the park, the wayfinding sign is really spectacular. But anyway, there's a lot of firms out that are small but specialized in that sort of mm-hmm. thing, which is kind of nice. So you know, hopefully we can get the award and then, you know, do an RFP and see what happens.
Okay. And then developers, I would imagine you guys, the Hollies and whatnot.
Haven't talked to
you.
Nope. Okay. But we will.
You think?
I think so. I'm more hopeful.
Okay.
Right now.
That's good.
Yeah, on the developer one, that made me think. I had a communication day from the actual, and I should have mentioned this under Axe Factory, and I'm sorry for jumping back and forth, Matt, but they're kind of looking for a list of individuals or organizations they should speak with to get an idea of local market intelligence, and I don't know if we have any recommendations that, you know, people want to send me, you know, now or outside the meeting, that's fine, but I was looking to kind of filter that back to the consultant working on the economic impact statement for the X Factory. So, you know, local developers, local realtors, commercial experts, etc. That's kind of what they're looking for, people to kind of introduce and get a better understanding of the market conditions.
That woman that presented to us from the shops was really good. I don't know, I forgot her name now, but
yeah, Elizabeth
Liz.
Ackerman.
Elizabeth, yeah, she was really good.
Liz Ackerman.
New tenants. And,
Maybe Rich Correa could give us a good idea. He's a commercial real estate broker. Of course, there's Goldman York. And then various realtors in town have a pretty good idea.
If anybody has any thoughts, let me know. But those are the ones that typically come up in my mind as well. I feel like we used to have a bigger pool of, you know, market experts in the town, and, you know, they've slowly disappeared over the years.
Well, you know, theoretically, any developer who's coming into town or is considering Canton would have some idea of the economics. You know, they'll have done some kind of an analysis. So we can ask them to, if they want to share that.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
That's actually a good segue into item number 6, which is Canton economic backdrop, which is ultimately our attempt to focus on data. I mean, you know, what is the data telling us in terms of, you know, kind of how we make decisions? And we've done a lot of work So far, in terms of, you know, trending the demographics within town, the population growth, we've done a lot of work with the fiscal impact studies and the cost of community services. All that's kind of bundled in this economic backdrop. So we update that data on a recurring basis as it becomes available. No updates this month, though.
You know, I think a big factor in here is momentum. It's like, who's considering us now, and how does that compare to other areas? And I think one area that we may want to look at is apartment vacancies. You know, the real estate, you know, the residential real estate market kind of tells us some things. When we build things, when things get built, how quickly do they get occupied?
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, anecdotally, I've heard, you know, as soon as 35 Cherry Brook got built, it was rented. I think the Laurel, a little slower. The houses up at Applegate Farm, faster than they can complete them. The ones over on High Street, completely rented, the four up there, about the five on, you know, next to Laurel Heights on Route 44. But I think that is important.
Yep.
Because it tells us that, you know, but for available units, we would have more population. People see Canton as a desirable location. The other thing is, how many, you know, what kind of interest are we getting from folks who are considering Canton in terms of site for a business, expansion of existing businesses. You know, I know we've talked with, Barry and I have talked with several developers, even owners of property in town, you know, who have decided not to go forward with plans because of other conditions, you know. And then, so I think maybe going back around with them and asking, if these conditions were not the case, would you? You know, what do you see? So, and I'm thinking about Jeff, you know. And some others. So, you know, so we'll see. I think there are some, you know, some of the conversations that we've had with developers, you know, revolve around, are they coming? You know, where are we with everybody's kind of like a surfer in this, you know. When do I start paddling really hard to catch the wave? Is there a wave coming? Or is it past? You know, so, and I think in some economic data we found that the Farmington Valley is one of the fastest growing areas in the state. So, is that sustainable? Is it temporary? Is it a blip? We don't know.
Is the data for this report available to share with the committee, or is there a dashboard where this exists, or a report? Or?
We have a I have a PowerPoint. Okay. The last time, I'm trying to think that one you just talked about, where we compared, you know, Farmington Valley, yeah, to the state and other areas within local proximity. That was maybe over summer. I could get it up. It's a PowerPoint presentation.
Awesome. Okay,
and I'll send it your way.
Yeah, and there's also the Connecticut Data Collaborative.
Right.
Okay. They've got. They have some seminars coming up. They're a public agency. They do offer these seminars. I think they're starting to charge for them now, like 50, 75 bucks or something. And I don't know if we've got money to put somebody in, you know, into one of those. But it might be a really good idea to at least look at their website, see what data they have and what tools they have to work with it. Mind you, a lot of the data that's available to those folks is a little old. It's, you know, there's a 1 to 2 year lag.
Yeah.
in most of it, and that's that lag is really important.
Sure.
Really important.
You know, what was that data that I think Liz Ackerman or maybe someone else had put together where they used, I think they tracked cell phones in terms of where people came
fencing,
from?
Geofencing.
That's the one. I think they used it, but I remember I went through a whole workshop on it actually for the island of Nantucket, and they actually were, you were there too with me, right?
Yeah.
And it was fascinating what they were doing, and they basically found about their, one, they found how much their population is, basically by weeding out the transients, by tracking the geofence people. Huh. But the other thing was they found like two pockets of clusters of people that frequently come to the island from two different geographic areas of the United States, and they knew now the businesses on Nantucket could target those two geographic areas with their advertising. I mean, instead of like trying to canvass all of the United States or where do we, you know, mass mail, they had their populations known and they could target them, and then they knew when they came to the island kind of where they were going and what they liked to go to and what they didn't like to go to. And it was really just a fascinating presentation. That was like over 10 years ago.
Yeah, but it's still...
It's really powerful stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, they're doing it more and more. And maybe I could reach out to... what was her name? Ann? Ann Turner?
Yep.
And see what she's got. She's in that industry. She used to be a member here.
What's her name?
Ann Hunter, yeah.
Yes, Ann Hunter. All the same letters.
Yeah.
You're right.
Just missed the H, actually. Missed the H.
She would know, and maybe Jen Barlow is also somebody who would know that stuff.
Along those lines, too, Matt, I had sent you, and you said it was okay to bring up the...
Yeah.
The Avon Town Planner reached out to me, and he was interested in going up to... there's an entity called... Incremental Development, and it's like a newsletter, Incremental Development Happenings, and the whole idea is, you know, big change starts small, and, you know, while a lot of towns try to chase that one big elephant of a project for that one big windfall to the grand list, most healthy economic systems are, you know, supported by a nice, steady, incremental level of development, and the workshop that is going up in Vermont is an all-day workshop exploring the fundamentals of building that part of your economic base. And he reached out to me if I was interested in trying to facilitate that type of event happening here. And I said I'd bring it up here tonight, but I said I probably would be interested, but I have a feeling for them to come and do something in our region, we either have to get the entire, you know, Farmington Valley towns together, or we have to maybe go through our capital region planning agency and ask them to facilitate it so they can get enough interest. But wanted to raise it here as an idea. Is that something that, you know, I should send him back a positive response and pursue or not? Or
I think it seems to make sense.
Yep. As long as it doesn't cost us anything. Okay, well, I'll let him know that we're definitely interested and got a very favorable response tonight and see what happens.
Yeah. Great.
Yep.
Well, it's interesting, and I think I'm probably the only one that actually pays for the Hartford Down Ferry card. But for some reason, my wife wants it. And every day, when you look at it, you see big articles about developers going into this town or that town or this town, and they're all the same dozen names. Kenny's kid has become Kevin. Big Smoke.
Yeah.
His father died, and all of a sudden, Kevin Kenny's name pops up. What's his name, the crook? Carpionato.
Carpionato, he's big, yeah.
Is now everywhere.
Yeah.
He's in West Hartford and so on, and all the rest of it. My little pal Richie is doing big work over on Farmington Avenue in West Hartford, right there. Obviously, the king of it all is Vessel, which is going in, or trying to go in, everywhere and having good success in a number of communities with their formula to put up these Vessel projects. The thing I wonder, you got the same dozen developers and they're really making huge hay with multifamily occupancy. Neil, do any of those people ever come to you about Canton?
Yep. Yeah. I met with at least one, possibly more on that list, and one of the challenges is finding a site, oddly enough. It's tricky. Our values are very high. Our constraints are very high. The amount of developable land per acre is a lot less than other towns just because of how difficult our land is. We have limited access to utilities. Nothing's really flat. What's not flat is steep, or what's not steep is wet. It gets complicated. But
are we the only ones that can't figure it out? Because these other towns, if you read, and I read this every day to see where Vessel's going,
yeah,
and where Kenny is going, and where, yeah, Carpionato is building, and even where Little Richie's building, and Richie's partner, Avner Crown,
yeah,
and all the top 12 names come up every day in the not very current. And how do these other towns do it?
Well, if we could swap out land with Simsbury, if we could somehow dig up Hop Meadow Road and transplant it on 44, and then they could have our Rocky Mountain,
right?
Then I think that would probably open up a lot of.
We can give them a lot of rocks and right about now they would
so
love.
So they have sand,
right?
Like it's sandy bottoms.
Unfortunately, it's kind of the hand that we're holding.
But are we the only ones holding that hand? And everybody else is able to do it.
New Hartford. If you look at New Hartford, you see a very challenged landscape there.
Park Hampstead. They're all challenged Burlington's for the same reason.
Burlington, yeah.
And they're also disadvantaged because they're that much farther out from a highway, from Hartford, from all the places that people want to maybe go work, or that's just too far out to attract any kind of development like that.
Yeah.
Here's my wonder, and you asked it at the beginning of the meeting, priorities for 2026. And I've said this before, and I've gotten nowhere, and I'll say it again, and still get nowhere. The thing that knocks me out is that we're supposedly the economic development agency for this town. We have no budget. We have no support from the Board of Selectmen. Nothing. They don't know us. They don't want to know us. We couldn't get funding for $1,000. We're just non-existent to them. And when you bring in a very, very, very good proposal, like the facade initiative proposal, you don't even get an answer. I guess if I had to have a priority, what would we need to do for the EDA in Canton to get the attention of the powers to be, so that we mattered and had a better chance of pulling in development? What do you think of that?
Can I throw an idea out? I think something that would be very concrete is, we're talking about the facade improvement plan, and we're talking about a specific area of Route 44, basically from Lawton Road to East Hill, maybe a little bit closer to that, closer to, Canton Village. That area on the north side of Route 44 is utilities challenged. If, and I know that years ago we did a study, across all of 44 to see what it would take to put in utilities on the north side, and it came up with about $11 million. And we just didn't see, how we would be able to repay that. But if we condensed the study area, and we made it just that, I don't know, it's maybe 3/4 of a mile, a mile, in that area, maybe we can look at that and champion that as, there's bang for the buck here. If we can make that case, that's the whole idea here, is if you spend a buck and you can get 10, good. If you spend a buck and you get 50 cents, not good.
So, Rob, what do you see between, what two business landmarks that we know of on the north side of 44 that you're thinking about?
Well, we have our dear friends over at the Furniture Emporium. And all the way through to, the orthodontist over across from Canton Village.
Barry Rosenberg.
Rosenberg. And within that, you also have the area where Tower Farms and, you know, you've got the, you know, the junk house, the blue house.
Lava Motors.
Lava Motors. But there's land back there that's relatively flat. Actually very flat in some areas and then not flat at all. And that area, I believe, has no sewer. And they're wells, yeah. Mostly wells, right?
Weren't they part of, like, that question that we had about including them in a sewer shed?
Yes.
So wouldn't they have to be, wouldn't have to be sewer service?
Well, that just means, that just means then if you're officially in the sewer shed, that means you're not in a sewer avoidance area, which means then if you're going to develop, you have the ability to pay yourself to extend sewer to those areas. Which that's the problem is it costs an awful lot of money to extend it. And that's why the EDA did the initiative Bob referencing for the utility extension study, which I will say there was a specific area of focus that was drilled into in that study. And it was called the most bang for your buck area. And there was like, if we're going to do one thing and only invest here, here's where we get the most bang for our buck. And that was completely untenable and economically infeasible to really do based on the expected return. However, at that time, the methodology employed was to evaluate the remaining developable properties or how the ones that could be redeveloped or, you know, freshly developed, and what would the tax revenue generation be from those. And I believe the methodology just treated those based on commercial, traditional commercial zoning. And that was before the high-density residential really jumped into the market, and that could really conceivably change the outcomes, if I'm recollecting that story, that study properly. It's been a long time since we've looked at that. So I'm wondering, maybe I should send that out to everybody. We all revisit it, and then we consider, is that something that should be revisited now with an understanding of what the current market conditions are? Because you get a lot more square footage on a three-acre lot than you know, with a mixed-use or housing. Than you would with your stereotypical, you know, one-floor commercial retail with a huge parking lot, right? And I think the latter is what was used to figure out the future tax generating
exactly
potential.
Yeah, yeah. Because and plus, let's face it. You look at shopping malls and vacancy and commercial vacancies, and you say the market is really not there for that. And look at what lenders are willing to, you know, give money for. You know, it's not commercial. It's not office. It's residential. So, you know, that may be you're just rethinking it, attacking it that way. Because, you know.
But you don't think it would be worthwhile for EDA to make a concerted effort to target our top 12 developers and to target our town leaders and ask them what it is that the EDA would be allowed to do and spend to bring these people in?
Well, if we have a good an economic analysis, then we could kind of do it. We would kind of be backing ourselves into a tax increment financing program. Really is what we're talking about, you know, and, you know, so that way the town is sharing in making some land that currently would be difficult to develop because of the lack of water and sewer to land that's much, you know, that's much more easily developable. That could work.
Neil, what about how do the other town planners in places like West Hartford and places like Glastonbury and so on, they seem to be able to attract these people in and get them to put shovels in the ground and build things. Do we ever talk with their town planners to find out what they've done to see how they made it work?
In the past, I have. I haven't done that recently. Again, some of these towns you're talking about are big enough where they have their own economic development staff and things of that nature. But we're not West Hartford. We're never going to be able to compete with West Hartford. It's an entirely different market than where we are out here on the west side of Hartford County on 44.
We've got different topology and, yeah. and different traffic patterns.
They have a highway that runs through it. They're
direct on the adjacent good side of the mountain. Hartford.
They're flattening on sand.
Yeah. Right, they've got a tremendous town center. Yeah.
Yeah. What about the towns that aren't West Hartford that do it?
Look, give me an example of one.
Cheshire.
But I think you're being swayed by Cheshire because that new development's going in right off of 691.
Right.
I mean, is there a lot of other stuff going on in town?
There actually is, yes.
Yeah, there's a lot.
But we could pull up a list that Bob put together from a few meetings ago that talks about all the development we've had in town over the last 5 years.
There's quite a bit. Residents, they think we're growing way too fast on one perspective, and others think we're not growing fast enough.
That was the biggest takeaway from the community survey that we put out was there's too much development. So should we be focused more on redevelopment, revitalization, and infill?
That's what I
as opposed to big, you know, massive apartment buildings?
I mean, I think a good comparison for us is Burlington. Because now as you go up Route 4 and you go into Burlington, I mean, 10, 15 years ago, it was a nothing. I mean, it had the little plaza with the dive bar. I know, because I went there. You know, and a CVS and a Cumbies, which has now been rebuilt. But all along there now, all the houses that were kind of like little businesses, they have got all new facades. I mean, it looks really nice up there now. And they're filling in between them with some new construction. And actually, it looks quite nice. But they're challenged the same way we are. It's on a hill, and it's on ledge. And, you know, coming off to the side of it, I don't know if they have any apartment houses, I haven't seen anything like that. I don't know how much they're developing back behind there, but clearly the money is there to develop on Route 4. And it's been, looks like it's been successful.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of those communities that are sitting on hills, basically, and they're all rock. I mean, like, you look at Litchfield. I mean, Litchfield is a... You know, there's all kinds of great demographics in the area, very low density, but, you know, they got money. But
they got New Yorkers.
They got a lot of New Yorkers, but they don't, although they shop here. But they can't have, you know, they don't have the kind of economic drivers that we have. I mean, they come to the shops, and they come to the stuff that we, you know, down the road in Avon, and you know, to Whole Foods, and they come here.
But I guess to answer your question, I don't envision the town ever giving the EDA, you know,
any
massive
money.
Budget. I think what's the most we've ever gotten? At least in my recollection, probably for the website, what was that, like $30,000?
Oh no, more than that.
It was like 80-something thousand we were getting a year to do the marketing campaign and everything. And you know, that was
No, we could do it. It's just I think we just have to prove that it's gonna perform. That's really all it is. It's like it's dollars and cents.
See, I guess if the town doesn't want development, they're happy. No. Who's to say that they're wrong?
I think town hall isn't opposed to it, but I think the majority of residents are.
No, I don't even agree with that. I think that if you ask just a bald opinion, you know, it's kind of like, do you like bald eagles? Yeah. You know, do you like bald eagles when they're like, you know, snatching fish out of the river? Yeah. Do you like it when they're like eating cats? No. You know, it's like, what are they doing? You know, it's, you know, when you present people here, there are some people who like hate apartments. Don't want apartments. You say the word apartment and you might as well have said something much worse. You know, there are other people who say, okay, where and around what? And you start talking about a, you know, the village concept, and we're in multi-use, and, you know, we're talking about Route 44 and not talking about Canton Center and Canton Village and the, you know, the bucolic scenes that we have around here. And it's like, oh, okay, you know, they may not like it, but they do understand that in these areas, you know, it's much more palatable. You know, of course we would love to have bucolic everywhere, but you know, the tax structure, it, you know, taxes will reflect that. go to North Jersey and see what they're paying, you know.
So how would town source money to the EDA get one of those developers that you're talking about?
Well, what I'm saying is that...
What would we use that money for?
Campaigns to go after them, to sit down with them, to find out one-on-one.
Well, that's free, right? We could pick up the phone and do that, right?
Okay.
Well, we can, but we have to have something in our back pocket.
Like a marketing brochure kind of thing?
In an area that would be appealing.
I'm being serious. Like what
not so much. Well, we have that. We have that. But I think if we have almost like an enterprise zone, this is where we're focused. You know, this is where the town is looking to make an investment in infrastructure to make it easier for you to come on in. So then, you know, when Richie and Avner and Kevin and Jeff and all the rest of them come to Canton and say, okay, what do you got? I'm looking to do something, or, you know, what do you got? We can say, right here, and we, you know, this is the area that the town, if we have a partnership, we will apply for this, and it'll be ready for development. Then you're talking. I mean, we talk to these guys, you know, but in the end, they're going to say, what do you got? You know, what's in your hand? You know, Canton's a nice place, but
so
I can't find a place.
Wasn't Commerce Drive supposed to be like that area back in the day?
I tried developing it.
That's the only, I mean, where else would you point anybody to?
Right, and unfortunately, Commerce Drive is a little bit complicated because it didn't build out as the office park it was intended to. They put large single-family homes at the end of it, and then when new things start to show up there for proposals, you have opposition from the neighborhood. The reality is we also have issues like that's owned by a specific individual, all the remaining lots. It's not like town-owned. It's owned by a private entity, and he has the ability to say yes or no to certain people. Some of the developers you may have mentioned may have sat down with him with a purchase and sale agreement, and he may have said, no, I'm not interested in selling to you because I don't like what you do, right? I mean, so we don't have control over those private property owners and private developers meeting together, sometimes without our ability to influence it or help, or doesn't matter if we did in some cases. So those things go on too. But yeah, that's where we had intended years ago as a community to actually try to get something back into the tax base. And I mean, just long story short, this is not untypical for a lot of suburban municipalities, but it was perfectly okay in everybody's zoning that was spread out across the country by the federal government and their, you know, policies. And it basically prioritized development of single family homes for a lot of important reasons. But when you develop communities from 1950 all the way through 2010 with only single family homes on streets and cul-de-sacs, and that's the majority of what you're building, it creates a liability, right? A financial liability, because the amount of tax generated from a single family homes doesn't pay for the infrastructure replacement that's necessary to support all the infrastructure that was put in over time, the pavement management, the utility replacement, cost of education, the schools, all of that. You've added it all together, and it's a real loser financially. The developers who built it sold their houses, got out, town accepted the infrastructure, and then 20, 30 years later, it's like, wow, we can't afford to pay for all this. And that's been perfectly okay for communities to grow that way. But as Bob pointed out, the minute we say, okay, we need to offset that and increase density here or development here or whatever, people now react because there's concerns. It'll change the town. It'll lower my property values. The home voter hypothesis kicks in. The whole system doesn't work financially that we've basically allowed our communities in the suburban areas to grow. It's a financially irresponsible model, but it was widely accepted, and now we're trying to turn that upside down, and it's a huge challenge. We have very, very limited sites, we have limited infrastructure, limited capacity, and so we don't have a lot of opportunities. So we have our opportunity sites mapped. We can bring people in and say, hey, here's where you want to locate. When any of those developers contact me, I say, here's our opportunity sites, and our PUCD says we want development here. In the past, some developers have looked at those sites and then came forward for projects, and guess what? They're not opportunity sites anymore, and no development happened, right? There's at least two big sites like that. So That's our challenge, you know. It's our challenge to try to overcome that in a way that can bring in development that won't completely offset, but minimize the pain that's put on the, you know, single-family homeowners and residents that we have now. And that's our goals. What can we do? And I guess I'm getting back to the word we used earlier, incrementally, to try to offset that burden. And we're trying to come up with our best policies we can to try to, you know, do that.
So what about that utility extension study and revisiting that based on that new zoning, starting there, focusing in on a certain area of the 44 corridor, and then using that to maybe define new opportunity sites eventually, or that can kind of feed into it, or?
Sure.
Under new zoning, I mean, things have changed.
Makes sense to me.
It's infill, it's where things are already developed. Yes, it's private property, but I still think, you know, with the business outreach and the developer outreach, I mean, if we're talking to these folks already, maybe they'd be willing to look at their properties with us at some point too.
We certainly could do that. Our POCD is opening up again. We're going to have a meeting soon to hopefully kick that project off, which will also possibly, you know, redefine what those opportunity sites are and redefine this whole conversation, actually. So we'll have to see what comes from that. But we developed a tax abatement policy for the idea that we're going to help, you know, try to bring in developers and give them a carrot, so to speak. And other than one small mom and pop business, we've never awarded any tax abatements. And, you know, we had one larger development that requested and got denied. That's, by the way, town meeting decision, right? So that becomes a popular thing, not a, you know, numbers thing. It depends if we were ever to get something, you know, big in that we wanted to go and say, hey, we need to do a tax abatement to make this happen. I don't know what you would get with our audience. We have to, you know, see, but it's not a, it doesn't look to me like something I'm going to say, here you go, we're going to guarantee you come to town, we're going to give you a tax abatement. No, I can't ever say that because I couldn't possibly guarantee anything that's contingent on town meeting. So we really are at a, you know, difficult situation. We don't have a lot of carrots and we don't have a lot of properties that we can offer people. So, I think another thing we should probably look at is we have a number of projects, since I've been here, that got a developer interested, got through local land use approvals, got approved, and never got built, right? And those are concerning because that's where we actually won the initial conversations and the dialogue, and actually the developer interest was there so much that they spent time and money, and now we still don't get the taxable benefit of the project that was approved. So we should probably pull all those out and explore what happened and maybe try to back figure what went wrong. I know one of them was a policy decision by a utility company that killed that, but there's other ones I'm not sure why. We should probably look into that.
Yeah. Can you compile a list of those and one of us will tackle that?
Yeah.
That'd be good. Good place to start. Tommy, I like your idea about exploring the opportunity zones on 44.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be happy to volunteer myself for more. I enjoy this stuff, so.
Okay. and what happened to the Barry from like two or three meetings ago, who kind of enjoyed the countryside view and the higher taxes? And
well,
I'm kind of confused.
First of all, I'm confused too.
He got his tax.
Because on the one hand, I think that if what this town wants is open spaces and whatever, and they're willing to pay for it. I know I am. And they're willing to pay for it. Raise my taxes. So what? Then so be it. Because that's where we're headed. But if that is the case, what's all this about? See, I'll give you two concrete examples. One of my closest friends, Abe Coe, who died. And Abe was a very substantial developer all throughout this area, including Canton. And Abe died. So what happened with Abe's real estate? I thought that would have gone away because I know his sons very well, and I would have told you they would have gone into the stores and forget that, but that's not the case. When Abe died, he had a project going on the Farmington River in Farmington to build 150 units over there on the river. And I thought that would go be better than a doornail. I had breakfast the other day with Maurice, his son, and Maurice is doing it. He's going forward and doing it. We've met with Abe, and of course Abe got hugely burnt in Canton when he tried to put the Lowe's in. It cost him $1 million and nothing happened. A similar story is Kinney. We met with Kinney. We had them in here, and Kinney, I thought when his dad died, because I thought his dad was really the whole show there, that would be the end of it. But no, his son has picked it up, and he's partnered with several other major developers in the area, and he's gone on to build all these other things. I mean, in places like Rockville and Vernon. It's not all West Hartford. It really isn't.
Are you in contact with them? With
the, we have
the,
been.
The kids, the sons?
We have been.
I guess the question, I mean, the natural question would be like, why, I mean, why not ask them? Like, why not Canton?
So Martin Kinney, the father, was, you know, a real success. He was very interested in Canton and actually had a project on Lawton Road and right across from the CVS and or the UConn building. And he had to kill it because it wouldn't pencil once he identified our sewer connection fees were, you know, whatever they were back at that time.
They were the fifth highest in the state.
Yeah, and then the EDA got involved, and he actually gave us data to show how it affected his bottom lines, and then the EDA used that information to then you know, work with town leaders and the Board of Finance and actually got the sewer connection fees lowered because it was a barrier to market entry for developers of his nature. And then we corrected him, and then I reached back out to him and said, hey, thank you so much. You helped us identify this issue. We fixed this issue. Come on back. We're ready to go. And not interested, you know, because you like with Abe.
And a lot of places.
You don't get a repeat opportunity with a lot
when
of developers.
They burn, when you burn your developer,
yep.
When you burn your developer, they're burned.
Yep.
And we have a record of burning our developers. They're burned. They're gone. Abe Kaoud, may he rest in peace, before he passed away, wouldn't hear of Canton again after his, and you know that, after his experience.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
He got an approval, too.
Yeah, kind of a little late.
Yeah,
a little late, because when the real estate market is tanked.
See, and what you were asking, in order to get these people to build things here, and it's not just West Hartford, they build in Vernon, they build in Rockville, they build in Windsor, they build in all these towns that are not so dissimilar from us. But the difference is, they want them there. They want them there. They act like they want them there. We act like we don't
want them. I thought that's
what
the idea of 5C was, though. I'm confused. I thought the idea with 5C was to have conversations with them to figure out why not Canton, so that maybe we can take corrective action to make Canton more desirable in their eyes. I thought that's what 5C was.
But when you're in a committee that has no support from the town whatsoever, nothing, has no budget, no support, the town doesn't...
Well, I think if we can identify what the hurdles are to attract these folks to our town, then I think we can go to town hall and outline, these are the challenges, and if we really want development here, this is what it's going to take to get it done, and this is what it's going to cost. I think that, to me, is the flow of the conversation and the way things need to kind of synchronize, in my mind. I don't know if anyone agrees or disagrees.
Well, I think that's wise, yes.
Yeah, but I also think, you know, I think what you may be saying, Barry, is, you know, if I could paraphrase you, is that the zeitgeist, you know, is against this kind of development. That if you were to put it out to a vote, the general public, I mean, Neil, you're saying the same thing. If it's tax abatement, if it's TIF, which is a tax increment financing kind of thing, and it has to go before a town meeting, that the voters, given the chance, would turn it down. I think we all kind of acknowledge that.
Our structure here is designed against the town structure, from the Board of Selectmen to the way our land approval processes work, is just designed to block large development. And it does.
Simsbury, and I presented to their EDA or EDC, whatever they call it, a tremendous backlash against apartments.
I think every
town.
Sorry,
where was this?
Simsbury. Says that.
Well, since they all went up? Yeah. Since they all went up, now.
Since they went up.
Where the insurance buildings used to be, they got knocked
there's
down.
There's tremendous backlash there. But, you know, and they're lamenting traffic, all right? Now, if you look at Simsbury, what's the main road through Simsbury? It's Hot Meadow.
Route 10.
It's a two-lane road. And yeah, in the morning, at rush hour, morning and evening, it's a bear. That road's a bear. We have this four-lane road going through Canton. We all complain about how fast everybody's going, but you know what? It moves cars. You know, it moves vehicles through the town. And you think Simsbury would like to have the equivalent of that with some traffic calming? And yeah, sure. You know, we don't have that kind of traffic problem that Simsbury has in Hot Meadow. But Simsbury's gotten to that, you know, they've had enough. And a lot of communities are saying, we've had enough. Fortunately, in West Hartford and the downtown, where there's a downtown concept or a village concept, people are saying, that's all right, but don't.
Because it's concentrated.
Because it's concentrated. It's condensed. It's here.
And they also have two roads. They have Trout Brook and they have Main Street.
Right.
So they have that also.
Yeah, they've got multiple ways to get around. They figured
and
out
close to highways
and all that. Yeah. So, you know, a little different dynamics, but I think it's going to take some real selling to say, this is what we're talking about. You guys are afraid of all this, but this is not all of that that you're afraid of. It's this, and this is why and how. And that's part of what the POCD process is about, is to get the town all on one page again and to say, you know, this the concept of Route 44 being sort of designated for commercial development is something that we've had on the books for 30 plus years. You know, we've all bought into it. And it was fine until people start cherry picking, well, I don't like Target. That was a big one, you know. And people didn't like the shops either. People didn't like this, and people didn't like that. And eventually we figured out a way to get it through.
All right, so that was a long conversation, but what's the what are the next steps in all this?
I think we go do this revisioning.
Circulate the utility needs or the utility extension study, revisit.
The develop the projects that were approved but didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then to me, I really think we need, you know, concrete reasons why developers are not coming. Something that can be addressed.
Yeah.
And that sounds like three solid steps forward in my mind.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of where the heck we left off.
I think
it was seven.
So the streetscape. Well,
so this,
I'm back from my long, deep winter freeze. And as soon as it gets a little bit warmer, like maybe one more month, I'll be jumping on this.
Can you just give the new guys just
a
backdrop in terms of what this is?
So mostly we're talking about just Collinsville proper itself, where you have Main Street, and then you have River Street, you know, right at the corner where it used to be our Collinsville Savings Bank, and now it's Northwest Community. Right there. So they have a little pad that was built when we did the whole reconfiguration phase one of the street. So it was kind of like a little bandstand, but it's not really big enough to be a bandstand. So the idea is, well, what can be done with that little pad that's above the ATM door there? So that's part of the streetscape. And then at the other end next to Dowd, so it's kind of like their bookends, is another like little pad that has kind of the same thing. So, you know, it's like art, or maybe something that's left over from the Collins factory, some piece of equipment, you know, a turbine or something that can sit there to commemorate Collinsville. Also, an idea for a wayfinder sign so that people just don't congregate in front of LaSalle Market. There's like, go up this way, you know, because we do have, you know, a good bones, and we have the grindstone, and, you know, things like that to get people to wander up that way as well. So it's a matter of getting a little bit of money and some ideas to do something nice with the pad, maybe have one be kind of like a seasonal change and one be a little more permanent or what have you. So looking for ideas. Those are some of my ideas.
Okay. You had a couple ideas that were thought were pretty good from a few meetings ago.
I have them written down, and I left them home. One idea that I saw in another town that was, you know, it was almost like a Burning Man thing. I don't know if you've ever heard of Burning Man.
Never heard of it.
What have you? Never heard of it. Yeah. But they had like a big, you know, a big blackboard that was just painted black on plywood or what have you. And, you know, it changed kind of like monthly, but there would be a heading, and then there would be chalk there, and people could write their answers into it. So it became very interactive with the town. One was like, when I leave the earth, I want to be remembered for. And then people could write down, you know, almost like an epitaph, what they want to be remembered for. So there would be interesting things like that, and it would change, and then people could, you know, anonymously, you know, write or put their name on it. I don't know what the heck. And so that was kind of interesting because it drew people in, and then there would be conversations around it and sort of like that. And that could change either monthly or seasonally or something like that. So that was one idea. And then the other one was the X Factor's got to have some old equipment around there. And when they start digging it all up, I'm sure there's some rust bucket thing that can come out. And we could have a painting party, painted all sorts of psychedelic colors or something like that.
There's the old turbine from the hydro plant.
I know. The hydro plant is down there. I think that would crush both of those pads. Yeah. I think that's a little too big.
I like the idea of picking off one of the old ski slope lifts.
Yep.
Well, the old tractor engine's at the top, if you can get it down there. Of course, that thing is rusted into position. But, you know, there's the sluice way screw things that could, you know, I mean, they got equipment, and once they start redoing it, you know, maybe it's just a matter of asking the sisters for, you know, a couple of pieces of that stuff. And
it's all about, like, little things that create a fabric of a downtown that Collinsville has done so well over years. One idea that I had, I don't even know if this would work here, but in Hartford, they've done a good job about, if you walk around downtown Hartford, every once in a while you'll see a sign. For example, outside of City Place, there's a sign that says J.P. Morgan was born at this site. And I don't know, I just find that stuff interesting, especially if you have like kind of a way to do that in Collinsville. I don't even know if we have any kind of historic items like that.
We do.
On this site, this happened here. I think that would kind of be like a little walking tour of things like
walking
that.
Tour.
We have that. We actually used to have on the website, we had an audio walking tour that David Leff recorded, and it had a map that all the different locations.
Yep.
I thought it was really cool, and I don't know what happened to it. It got taken down in the redesign of the website.
We need to bring that
back.
We have a ton of stuff.
Yeah,
of stuff.
That should be like a regular tourist thing. Like that mm-hmm. should be then out in the real world. You should have a sign saying you're at station one.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And some communities have things like in the sidewalk. I think that's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Like Asheville, North Carolina, there's one little place in the center of downtown where, you know, like a pocket watch. It's kind of like, you know, like made out of metal. It's kind of embedded into the thing, and there's a comb and all that kind of stuff. You're like, what is that? And it turns out that you know, the very famous short story writer O. Henry was born and lived in Asheville, and he wrote his stories there. And there it is, boom. You know, who knew? I didn't know that.
It's on our website right now, just not promoted in any way. Walking tours of Collinsville. There's a red tour and a blue tour and a green tour.
Would you send that to me?
I'm going to send it to everybody.
Okay, that would be great. That's definitely part of this.
And send it over to Kathy Taylor, too, over at Main
Street. I think, like, markings. Obviously have that, but, like, actual physical markings.
Right, that's what we're lacking out there. So a visual cue to somebody that they should even, on their phone, go and listen to that.
It's marketing, by God.
And that would encourage, you know, the flow of people throughout Collinsville, to Jen's point, instead of just, you know, on the main thoroughfare where the sal is.
You could put on QR codes, people can use their phone, absolutely, scan it, bring it to a page.
Good stuff, good stuff.
So I have one to add to this, though, just so that you know. On Pearl Street is a plaque for the dentist by the name of Horace Wells. He is the discoverer of the effects of laughing gas.
And I like that guy.
No, yeah. There's a, you're talking in Hartford?
In Hartford.
There, in Bushnell Park, there's a statue of him near,
yes,
the near that pond.
Yes.
Where he was the inventor of Novocaine, right?
No, laughing gas.
Who was the Novocaine guy?
I'll have to look that
one
up.
I swear it's the same guy. Maybe he did both.
Well, it might be the same guy, and we learned it two different ways. That's the story that I was taught when I was in dental school.
Where would modern dentistry be without Novocaine?
Seriously.
Or laughing gas.
Oh, yeah.
Well, anyway. But he went up to Harvard to demonstrate it, and they laughed him out of the operatory.
He gave him too much gas. I'm sorry.
All right, WPCA, hopefully that memo was helpful in your discussions with planning and zoning.
The conversation got complicated a little bit, and as you might imagine, I had a similar memo from Conservation Commission, which in some places you guys were on the same page, in other places you were going in opposite directions, which was, you know, anticipated. And planning and zoning had a good conversation. I still have to document all the notes. That's on my. I blocked out time to do that tomorrow. I know WPCA is meeting right now, and they're hoping to get those comments for tonight, but I didn't have them ready. But we're also going to be bringing back their consultant to our meeting on the 18th or the 19th, the third Wednesday of this month, and then they will be doing a little bit of a follow-up conversation just to kind of maybe finalize some of their recommendations. I think the consultant was listening at home and wishing he could have been present to help. But the PZC had a lot of questions, so we're going to revisit it. I'm going to put the draft comments from PZC out hopefully this week, and then we'll have maybe a quick final discussion on the 18th. But it was very helpful to get your comments, and those of the Conservation Commission.
Any takeaways from that sidewalk?
The sidewalk was really insightful. Really insightful. It's almost like, you know, when we were walking through and seeing what they're actually doing there and what, you know, what's working really well, what their challenges are and all that stuff. A number of us were there. I mean, Kevin was there, Michael Vogel was there, somebody from the Conservation Commission was there as well. We came away thinking, it's almost like when you don't know what they're doing down there, it's like we're almost speaking two different languages. We're very focused on, okay, well, how much more stuff can we add on to the sewer system? And they're saying, how can we keep this thing up and running, if some equipment breaks down, what are our alternatives? You know, some of that stuff is like really, really old and needs replacing or upgrading, or there needs to be some redundancy in there. Other stuff is really, really new, and it's working terrifically. So, it was really an eye-opener. They're very committed to making that information, that experience, open to the public, not maybe traipsing through the stuff, so that people understand what they're facing and what they're, when we talk about capacity, what does that mean, and what are the licensing requirements? Something that I didn't realize is that in order for them to expand the capacity of the plant, they have to say, here's what we expect to be processing. Here's how much flow we're expecting through that plant. So we have to say, based on this crystal ball that we have, what's coming. And the question was asked, well, supposing we say, we're at 950,000 gallons per day. And we say, let's just tack on another 400,000. So we're up to 1.3 million. All right, and that way we've got capacity. And the consultant was explaining, their engineer was explaining, that's not how the licensing works. So for the plant, so we need to, we may need to talk to our legislators about, you know, you're kind of, you're building these constraints into your sewer system planning and licensing process. So that's something that we have to deal with too. So just a little flavor of what we talked about. So there will be a number of public information sessions, and hopefully they'll be able to explain. They'll be given a chance to explain what it is, and they'll be more articulate about it, and so that people will kind of like tamp down their, you know, what the heck, you know, what are we doing, you know, why is this like, you know, and all that kind of stuff, and just listen to, okay, here's what it is, here's what it really is. If we can get to that point, Canton has been as good as any community I've ever seen. But we got to get there.
So the repair work they're doing, or have done, I mean, it sounds like the one meeting I attended, which was the prep meeting for the questions they threw at us,
yep,
they made it sound like, you know, they're not hopeful that that's going to have any kind of meaningful impact, which I was shocked at, because I saw data where, you know, if we don't have any rain, we're at 50% capacity.
Right.
And now the story is, no, we're at 100% capacity, which is, to me, it's like all of a sudden the messaging changed.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense to me. I haven't seen any new data, but yeah, the plant basically has like 40 to 50% inflow. Infiltration, right? So we know that because their 180-day moving average goes up when it rains, right, and it goes down when it doesn't rain.
And it's right? still that way even after all of the work that was done on the sewer, sewer lines.
They did work on the sewer lines in some areas, but then they were doing the flow metering to identify hot spots where there was infiltration. And I don't think I thought they were identifying hot spots. I don't think they had gone out and actually like closed them off, but I could be wrong. But if they're reporting, and we're speculating, I would want to hear what they're reporting based on their flow metering. But if they're reporting like, hey, we don't think we're going to be able to fix it based on our flow metering, then well now what do we do?
Right.
Like what's our policy to address that? Because
yeah,
every project, whether we can do it or not, comes down to, do you have water and sewer? Right? Two fundamentals? Right?
Yeah. And there was another wrinkle they threw at us at that meeting that I wasn't aware of. So the hydro plant was put in or redone, and now it's online. But in order for that to work, the river is the water level is higher.
Right.
In order for that to work.
On the dam.
And they're saying at WPCA that because the river water is higher, there is some element of infiltration
from the river.
From the river, but they're not quite sure what it is. Well, to me, it sounds like maybe that's the source of all the problems, if the repairs aren't really doing much.
I think it's more than that. It's more than that, and some of the stuff, as we addressed that on the tour, some of the stuff, the equipment is fine where it is. It's not getting, you know, it's not getting more water at the plant, but in other places, there can be more.
I imagine the water level's higher in the river, and that's getting into the older Collinsville sewer infrastructure. And that's where you have cracks and crabs and things that need to be sealed.
One thing that they do not have, and we really need to close this loop, they do not have a direct connection to the Collinsville Hydro, to Canton Hydro. No. And you know, because I talked to them about the gates that control the level of the water in that basin. And they really didn't have that in focus, and I think they need to. They didn't realize that those gates are very, you know, can move, will move based on certain characteristics of the, you know, of the water, how much flow and what level and blah, 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 all that stuff. So, you know, they didn't see that as a controlling mechanism. Hmm. You know, and that I think is a fault in their estimate. So we need to connect the dots. And I'm not sure exactly who they should talk to. If it's Armin or if it's the Wasserworks people or whatever. But I need to circle back.
I mean, they have to maintain a certain amount of head there, so.
Yeah.
Who does the, that now we're on the topic of the hydro plant, where's that electricity go? Like, who benefits from that electricity? Who gets it?
I think it goes back out into the grid, and it's net metering. Basically, they show how much they're putting back in, and the net metering legislation that got passed allows them to basically get credits for it, something like that. It's,
no, it's not quite like that. They actually have contracts with, they supply electricity to certain certain contractors or contracts, and they use the net metering in order to put kilowatt hours onto the system and then to take them off at the site. So I think they got four or five large clients who pay them for the electricity, and they use the Northeast Utilities or whatever they're called now, Eversource, as a transmission mechanism.
Does the town get any economic benefit from that plan?
Yes. There's, what do they call it, payment in lieu of taxes, pilot programs, but not the property taxes that we had expected to get. That was the subject of a long-running legal battle, and we finally solved it by getting these pilot payments, but it's small. And we don't, if the grid failed and all that kind of stuff, I'm not sure how we would gain access to the power that's generated there locally. You know, I don't know if the grid is smart enough to be able to do that. But I mean, that would be kind of ideal. You know, these local, highly localized power generation facilities, you know, makes a lot of sense. You know, because you know, that's we're talking resilience there, you know.
Yeah, it's like a gateway to the town. I feel like they didn't, obviously they finished the work there, but they didn't leave it in a very
there's no fish in
pleasing,
the ladder.
You know.
It's not beautiful.
No.
No. No. We have snapshots.
But, yeah. All right, last item, number 9. Marketing. This is ultimately, so we used to have a town website, and then we also Make a Canton website, and then that was also a social media kind of handle. And we had an advertising firm on contract that was part of EDA money, where they would do social media posts under the Make a Canton tagline, and they would promote local businesses. I don't know if you guys have ever seen any of that stuff. But that funding was pulled from us maybe 2 or 3 years ago at this point. So essentially the Make It Canton campaign has kind of, you know, fallen flat at this point. And it was very well received. I mean, the numbers in terms of the likes and the clicks and the shares and so on and so forth were pretty impressive. So this is here because, you know, is there any way to revitalize or reinvigorate Make It Canton? And one of the ideas was to potentially reach out to the high school. And we've already done that a little bit, but it hasn't really gone anywhere. But revisit that. Does the high school have any role to potentially play in this? Whether it's part of the curriculum, a club, it's like mutually beneficial. They can do some posts, and they can also kind of learn and the process and to be marketers. So,
well, I'm in strategic communications. I promote UNC Chapel Hill and University down in Manhattan. That's what I do.
Okay.
That's part of what I do. You know, I manage social medias. So I'm here at your disposal if you want to crank that back up. We have a plan in place and we have content.
Yeah.
Know,
yeah. Get that. I think that as part of the business outreach to determine some way. I don't even know how this would work, but yeah. You know, what businesses would be interested in being featured in this, and is there a fee to do it? I don't know, but that's something to keep in mind as you pursue that agenda item.
Excellent.
I'm not quite sure how Lumi was the agency. I'm not quite sure how they arrived at their candidates.
They did a
lot. But it wasn't pay to play, right?
No, it was not. It was surprisingly difficult for them to get participation. You know, it was interesting. They created we created a framework where they could, you know, they could put up listings, they could put, you know, and we would promote it on the website, and it was like pulling teeth to get them to do it. A lot of it because we're talking mom and pop things, and it's like, oh yeah, there's one more thing to do, and so a lot of them didn't. We featured a number of players, but they were the more social media savvy folks who understood what this could mean, and they did well with it, you know. But you know, we need to have another go around with it. The other thing is that Canton is surprisingly difficult to promote. You wouldn't think so. I mean, we've got, like, take the historic museum, and it's, you know, I've kind of pinged on them a little bit, but they're open on weekends, you know, and very limited hours. So if we promote the heck out of it, and it's a great, 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 great resource, but you can only go there on a Saturday or a Sunday, you know, from 12 to 4. That's, you know, it's like, that's hard. You know, it makes it hard. If it was 7 days a week, if it was, you know, 10 to 6, if it was, you know, that kind of thing, then it's like, okay, if there were programs for da da da. And it's just an example of, you know, of, but we have a number of those kinds of restrictions that got in the way. And the other thing was the events that we have. Like the Halloween parade, for example. The organizers of that event do not want promotion because they're at capacity. They got all the people that they want. And they're not going to push it. We had some events like Collinsville Hot. That's not here anymore. You know, so there are things that we would, you know, we got the farmers market, so that gets promoted. And then we got to go from there. You know, the champagne walk, got to be careful, a little bit careful. If you get too many people, you got a whole lot of drunks walking around. it's that kind of stuff.
I would argue that it's probably even close to capacity. Yeah. At least the last time I went.
Yeah.
Mopped. They were having a hard time, I think, keeping up last time.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, and that event, it's, you know, there's a number where you exceed the number and it starts getting sloppy.
Yeah.
You know. So it's tricky. It's trickier than you would think.
Like, who does it for the farmers market? Is there a dedicated person?
There's a few vendors that'll do it. You know, sometimes I am involved with it.
A few meetings ago, I think it was probably over the summer maybe, I quickly, prior to the meeting, I went and ChatGTP and tried to create and I fed it some of the old legacy Make a Canton, you know, posts.
Yeah.
Featuring a business. And I just picked a business in town and I said, and I gave it parameters and I said, and these are some of the, here are some of the ideas or the prior posts that we do, so you kind of keep it in this flavor. And for a first draft, it was, what they spit out was pretty good. And if you kept working with it, it would probably get to a point where we could do it for a whole bunch of businesses. And then if we had this way to communicate with local businesses with this database, we could say, here's our first draft, make any changes you want, and then we'll put it up there. I don't know if that would save any time, but to me, I'm thinking it probably would.
Sure, and maybe even have like a template to say, make sure your hours. You know,
hours, phone number, address.
Should I send out all that marketing information I sent out previously to make sure everybody has the...
Yeah, that'd be good. All right, circling back to item number one, any other priorities that we haven't touched on tonight that anyone has?
You know what I think we should do? Remember how we analyzed the tax being generated by some of our newer projects, and they were alarmingly disappointing, and then we realized there was the phase-in, because the shift of commercial property to residential property resulted in the three-year phase-in. I think we need to track that and make sure that we're seeing that shift at least by a third or something this year. I don't know how the math would work out, but that certainly should be on our list to revisit when the budget gets adopted and the tax bills go out to know what those properties did for assessment compared to the year prior and then the year prior to that, so we can kind of see that growth, hopefully. And if we don't see it, then we need to drill down into that and why.
Is there any way to get a list of new properties that would be impacted by this? I know the Laurel, the one behind Pelz and Paws, but I forget what that's called. That one is another one. Essentially, what happened is those went online after revaluation. So the property tax phase in, they got a really nice
for the first
tax incentive.
I think the residential properties appreciated much faster than the commercial.
Yeah.
I think that was the big thing. So the ratio of residential to commercial.
Yeah. Which in that dynamic led to the phase in to kind of ease the pain. But business owners or property owners got some benefit there.
Yeah.
Anyone? I mean, I can look into that unless someone else wants.
Oh, we got some time on that too.
All right, approve that we have two meeting minutes to approve. The December meeting, you have a motion to approve those minutes.
I need a motion.
Second.
Aye.
Okay, all in favor? Okay. And then our January meeting, it was just the three of us, so, and I wrote the minutes, so you guys are going to have to follow this one. Who wants to make a motion to approve?
Me.
Want a second?
Second.
All in favor? Good.
I can't say anything because I wouldn't mean. I'm going to believe you guys.
Oh, it was great.
Yeah.
Any development updates, Neil?
No, I don't really have anything this month. I know, like, 2 months ago, I was like, oh, wow, lots of people contact me on speculation. It was kind of exciting, and then nothing. I don't know if it's a holidays, change of the year, how cold it is, right? But nothing really to report this month.
I went to CVS the other day, and I kind of was trying to peek in between the construction fencing, and I could see there's the foundation is poured. I don't know if the next step is to start building up, but or if weather has gotten in the way of that.
Yeah, no, there's been some weather issues with that.
Yeah.
Actually, the last two houses in Applegate.
Oh, yeah.
There's been no, they were going up so fast, nobody's there working right now. It's too cold.
Yeah.
I guess they can't get heat in there enough right now. So. 375
Albany was interesting because they poured the foundation probably around the same time they did at the other project we're talking about. But then the units were being fabricated in a warehouse factory setting. So they're all prefabbed and then they all show up and then just start getting snapped together really quick. So that's going up really fast.
Yeah, I thought I was seeing things when I drove by it.
Yeah.
It went up so quickly.
Yeah, it's actually really impressive.
Yeah.
So building officials out there, I've taken a lot of pictures and stuff.
Is that the like the five apartment?
Yep.
Yeah. And we haven't gotten the outcry that we did with the Laurel. Mm. Five.
I saw Bird Code, Shake Shack. There's some movement there in that build-out.
Yeah.
And anything on Bird Code?
Well, I was going to say, they opened up their one in Cheshire in the project we mentioned earlier, and they're getting very good reviews. So I'm hoping we're next. The owners, they're paying the lease on it, and they have professionals that contact me from time to time, so it still seems kind of legit, but we'll wait and see.
Yeah, I like the chicken. I went to West Hartford. It was good. It was hot. It was spicy.
Oh, yeah.
And they'll get that gas station next to Bear's liquor store?
No, nothing on that. I know there was a gentleman who's bought some like older, similar properties in Farmington that had been looking at it for a while, and then he kind of just backed away. And I don't know what the complications are there. I don't know if there's an ownership issue and it's a land lease issue, but I'm not sure.
And what about the new owners of part of Cantonville Shops? Any...
No, we were supposed to have a follow-up meeting with them, and they canceled, and then we rescheduled, and they canceled that one as well, so no real update.
Mm-hmm.
Because that Applegate store is closing, right? They didn't renew the lease. Is that it?
Yeah.
But I think they're closing. I think it was extended. I think they're staying open later than they initially had messaged.
Okay.
That's what I've seen on social media anyway.
Right.
Is it going to close?
I don't know. I think the Applegate business had said that they were moving out of there.
That's what I heard.
Yeah. But then they provided an update saying that, oh, we're going to, you know, we're staying open later than, or longer than we thought. So I don't know.
Those two little houses still being torn down across from there? On
Dowd? Across from Dowd? Yeah. On the south side. They need to be.
I know. I thought they were. Well,
is it one developer that bought the both?
That's one for the list. That's one where the developer got all their approvals, and then the developer met with me afterwards, and it's like, well, I can't build what I got approval to do. I need to modify my, you know, contract limits for the boundaries. Like, well, you can't, because you only got approval based on those limits because you're in wetlands if you go beyond those limits. You'd have to go back and get a different wetlands permit. And next thing I know, the property's up for sale. So, you know, it's for sale. It's an approved project, but I can't explain why people come in and propose something they don't intend to do to get an approval and then try to do something else. That's a enigma that sometimes happens in our business.
And that was going to be what, townhouses or row houses?
Two families.
Yeah, they were very tastefully.
Yeah, they look good. And then one of the other ones is 3842 Dowd, which is right next to the Kent Village condos. That's a really beautiful project. That was bought by a credible developer. Now I don't know why it's not being acted on yet.
So. There's something going on just at the base of East Hill on where Dowd and Maple, I think it's still on the Dowd side. There are two houses. One got completely demolished and literally torn off the lot. And the other one looks like it's going to get demolished too.
Where is this?
Right at the curve.
As you go past the opening
to go to the high school. On the other side of Dowd.
That weird intersection there?
Yeah, the weird intersection. There was a white house fairly built fairly recently, gone. Completely gone.
No.
And then there's like a bluish house next to it, which had been there, was constructed earlier, and from the look of it, it's completely empty.
Huh. Last summer they had like tag sale after tag sale.
Yeah.
They were completely empty. They must have been pack rats or something, because they had a lot of stuff for sale.
I think they had been, those houses were owned by the former owners of South Pacific.
That's what I think, because they were Asian. I talked to the grandmother.
Yeah. Yeah, because she was Frank Chin's wife, and she kept it going after he passed.
Huh. I don't know.
Because that area was designated as a DOT was thinking about proposing a rotary there in that area.
Well, now that those are gone, that's almost possible.
Yeah, I can't stand that intersection.
Oh, it's of all the intersections around, that one is probably the most likely to benefit from the rotary.
Yeah.
Go on, huh?
Anybody have anything else? Let's adjourn at.
Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.
Hopefully, we didn't scare you off.
Not at all. My background is very similar to Neil's. I've been a planner for 12 years. Came from New York and D.C. Worked with economic development agencies down there. So
great.
Settled down in Canton and just excited to help out.
Great. Now, what brought you to Canton?
It's actually interesting. So I know you said Litchfield has a lot of New Yorkers. We kind of did